540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Republicans have nominated Congressman Mike Johnson from Louisiana to be Speaker of the House, the fourth candidate for the job in just 2 weeks, says CBS's Nicole Killian on Capitol Hill.
Johnson was elected after House Republican Whip Tom Emmer couldn't secure enough support. Emmer was Speaker designate for about 4 hours before he withdrew from the race. Former President Trump called Emmer a rhino and said he would be a tragic mistake.
There could be a vote on Johnson's nomination as soon as this morning. It's not clear he has the 217 Republican votes to get the job.
Here he comes. Cave, a fly ball to right field. Over is Carroll. He's got it! And the Arizona Diamondbacks are headed to the World Series.
The call from TBS Sports. In fact, the Diamondbacks are going to the World Series for the first time in 22 years. They stunned the Philadelphia Phillies 4-2 in Game 7 of the National League Championship Series last night. Arizona will play the Texas Rangers for the world title. Game 1 set for Friday night. Israel appears to be getting closer to a ground invasion of Gaza, says CBS's Holly Williams.
The Israeli military says that they've already launched limited raids into Gaza to kill militants. But obviously something much bigger is expected, especially if you look at troops massed near the border with the Gaza Strip.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby acknowledges an invasion would cause collateral damage.
This is war. It is combat. It is bloody. It is ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to be hurt.
Hurricane Otis is now a catastrophic Category 5 storm and has made landfall near Acapulco. It could drop as much as 5 to 10 inches of rain on Guerrero State, with as much as 15 inches possible in some areas. Another strike in progress.
The St. Lawrence Seaway, a crucial marine shipping route that links the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean, has been shut down after nearly 400 union workers went on strike. They want better pay to keep up with the rising cost of living.
If it wasn't for the St. Lawrence Seaway, the Lakes region and the rest of the world would not be connected the way they are with the seaway there.
Aaron Benziger is with Chicago-based Central Marine Logistics.
CBS's Jim Krasula. NHL players are going to be allowed to use pride tape this season. The league and the players' union agreed to give players the option to represent societal causes with stick tape during warm-ups, practices, and at games. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
It's rivalry week as Carroll University football travels to Kenosha to play the Firebirds of Carthage for the old Musket Trophy this Saturday, October 28th. The Pioneers earn the Musket the last.
Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. All of Wisconsin's Republicans in the U.S. House are praising new Speaker Mike Johnson. Scott Fitzgerald calls Johnson an honest congressman with strong conservative values. Democrat Mark Pocan says Johnson works against gay rights and reproductive rights.
Well, I can tell you he's definitely going to fit the mainstream of MAGA America.
That's Pocan speaking with Civic Media's The Devil's Advocate show. The University of Wisconsin in Platteville says staffing cuts will save the campus about $9 million. UWP announced yesterday it's cutting its workforce by 111. Oshkosh, Green Bay, and Parkside are also laying people off. Richland Center, Fond du Lac, and West Bend are closing. In all, UWP will reduce its number of staff by over 12%. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Craig Council has a job interview. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers granted permission allowing Craig Council to meet with the Mets about their opening at manager. Now, the Mets have David Stearns now as the team president. The team owner, Steve Cohn, spent over $350 million this year in player salaries. Meanwhile, Brewer GM Matt Arnold asked if there's any timetable in the talks.
I really don't want to put a timetable on it for Craig out of respect to him and the opportunity he has here. here. You know, I want what's best for Craig, first and foremost, and I obviously want that to be here with the Brewers.
NBA, the Bucks open the season tonight against the 76ers. The tip-off time at Five Surf Forum, 6:30. College football, the Badgers in Ohio State, Saturday night at 6:30. Sunday, it's the Packers looking to snap a three-game losing streak at home when they host the Vikings. Quarterback Jordan Love.
No, it's definitely something that we're looking forward to this week. It's just getting back at home, getting back in Lambeau, you know, having our crowd, you know, behind us.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows around 61. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered storms tomorrow, 65. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Electricity by 2030 with existing government policies. However, the report warns that current policies won't be fast enough to avoid accelerating climate impact. So the IEA calls for a tripling of renewable energy and a doubling of energy efficiency efforts by 2030.
Keep calling for much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today. Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Commerce Department today came out with their Bureau of Economic Analysis's report on the third quarter real gross domestic product. Evidently increased, beat expectations. I think they were expecting a 4.5% increase. It was 4.9%. And look, you know, you've got Janet Yellen saying, hey, the yields that we're getting on the long-term bonds, that's because of a strong economy. And here's the thing. The economy is fairly strong, but you wouldn't know it by talking to people. You wouldn't know. You would think we're on the brink of recession. In fact, we had a billionaire on TV today saying, hey, recession's coming. They just can't let that go. But here to share some thoughts on, well, how the economy is doing and, you know, is a recession around the corner tomorrow? That's why I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's great to be in your show, Rick. Thank you for having me.
So Yellen says the economy's strong. You've got this report coming out of the Commerce Department saying, hey, the real gross domestic product's beating expectations. You see all of this positive stuff, but ask any average American on the street, things are horrible. We're in the wrong direction. Dire.
I don't know. I mean, ask the UAW members. Some of them seem pretty happy with their tentative agreement with Ford the other day. And inflation, the Fed looks at only up 2.something%, you know, and income is up a little more than that. So people are catching up, but you don't feel good because you're 3% or 4% up for the year. You know, if your income is beating inflation by 3% a year, that's not exciting. I mean, most people, you know, 3%, you know, they don't even remember exactly how much, you know, what they were doing a year ago, and they're doing 3% more now.
Yeah.
They don't feel that excitement. Whereas if the stock market is booming and billionaires are becoming billionaires multiple times over, there's excitement on the newspapers. There's excitement on the news. even if that doesn't help your average, your typical guy who wants to buy eggs to cook breakfast tomorrow morning.
No, and I argue that that rarely helps the little guy. It rarely helps the ham and eggers when Wall Street is fat and happy. Which, again, I was reading an Economist article, you know, that basically said that, you know, the pandemic has broken our perceptions on how the economy works and what it is. You know, sure, people are having a struggle in certain areas, but this kind of view that the economy is, you know, completely in the tank is wildly out of sync with reality.
I think it is, but I think we're seeing two, almost like with the two-tiered system the UAW has been complaining about for years. The rich are doing great and getting richer. And a lot of Americans are still struggling to get by. They're getting raises that are about keeping up with inflation, and they're not catching up, and they're not doing better, and they don't see a way that their kids are going to be better off than they are.
Yeah.
And they're not feeling excited. And that's a problem. And I'm not sure what the solution is, but I think that all of these workers who are going on strike, whether it's the, you know, the guys in California who are working on movie sets for $60,000 a year, or the guys in Michigan who are making cars for about that same amount, people are insisting they want to get paid more.
And it's Morris, I got to stop you there, man. I think you're a little out of touch with what people actually earn. Those people walking the picket line in California, the SAG-AFTRA people, they're making in the 20s, 25, 26,000. These auto workers are starting off at 15 bucks an hour doing assembly work job. These aren't, 60 grand would be a dream for these folks. And I'm not trying to put you down, but what I'm saying is it's even worse than what you're saying it is for working people.
Oh, you're right. And that's part of the problem, is that people like me are out of touch with what's happening in the real economy, in the real world, you know, and things are great. I mean, I live in a nice apartment on Park Avenue. Everything's fine here. You know, the only union workers I deal with on a regular basis are the doormen who open the door when I come walk on the sidewalk to come home from, in the afternoon. And there's two tiers of our economy. People like me who sit at home and watch the stock market going up, we're doing fine. And those guys walking picket lines, whether it's here in New York or Michigan or California, New Jersey or anywhere else, they're walking picket lines because they can't afford to get by. They're not getting any respect from their employers. And they want the good life that they were promised. And they're now they're finally insisting on it. And I think that's good.
No, and that I think that's going to be good for a lot of things. And yesterday we talked about MAGA Mike Johnson coming in as speaker and the fact that he is against, wants to, you know, undo Social Security and Medicare. Because, you know, look, Social Security and Medicare have some problems. I think the best way to deal with those problems is to get workers like the Ford workers, those UAW members who are going to make, you know, upper a little over 40 bucks an hour at the top, and new hires 28 bucks an hour. Get them earning more money, but every working person earning a little bit more money, so they're putting a little bit more in instead of having these stagnant and declining wages that we've had for the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. And they're insisting on eventually getting rid of the two tiers. They're insisting on getting more people on the regular pension plan as opposed to the 401ks. And these guys are holding out for, in their, you know, making America great again, the way it was when unions were stronger than they are now. Of course, the exact opposite of what the MAGA crowd thinks make America great again means. But they're insisting, and I think that's good. That's for the free market. They are saying they want more money for their labor, and companies have to put up or shut up.
Yeah. Now, you know, again, you come back to the business press, yeah, kept focusing on everything that I've seen from there, how much it's going to cost Ford, how much it'll cost GM and Stellantis if they go along with the Ford deal. And, you know, one of the report, you know, Moody's Investor Services came out with its study on what would happen if these workers got the raises that they wanted. And they said it would cost an extra $1.1 billion a year for in the fourth year for Stellantis, an extra 1.2 for GM, extra 1.4 for Ford. And that sounds like a lot of money. And you go, oh, wow, that could be harmful to the company until you realize, you know, GM posted over $11 billion in profit last year. Stellantis was over $17 billion. There is money there. It's just not trickling down to the folks who actually do the labor.
Yeah, they can afford to pay a little more. And some of those people, they're going to be buying cars and stuff too. And some of the other people who are getting raised are going to be buying cars. This is affecting tens of thousands of workers. This is going to help the economy expand in all the different places where the UAW members are. There's some right near here in New Jersey, for instance. There were a few on strike there. And that all the places where they're getting raises, those businesses are going to be having more money. Those workers are going to have more money to spend. And that has a multiplier effect. And that is going to eventually help the car companies, too, to sell more cars.
And for me, the most important part of the deal with Ford had to do with getting the battery plants under the master agreement so that when the transition happens, you know, if we move to electric vehicles, that those jobs will also be union jobs so that we don't have a transition, as we've seen at multiple points throughout our history, where the new thing ends up being desperation, poverty, wage jobs, and we basically start back over. And it's the working people who, again, take it on the chin. It looks like that they've looked down the future, and they're trying to make sure that there is a, they keep calling it a just transition, but that working people don't get screwed in the future.
Yeah, we need strong unions, and that includes not transitioning people from union jobs to non-union jobs. Strong unions are good for America. I mean, it just seems so obvious to me. I don't even know how to explain to people without seeming condescending. We need union jobs. Everybody does better in places with union jobs. Even people that own car companies do better under union jobs. And it's true. And I think that insisting that as we shift from the internal combustion engines to the electric vehicles, that those be done by union workers too. This just seems so obvious to me, Rick.
Now, here's the thing, Morris. You know, when I announced this last night, and I talked about the wage increases and all this stuff. The first responses I got, both, you know, on the phone and via email, were, this is gonna raise the prices of everything, and you know, all of us are gonna have to pay for them. It doesn't necessarily have to be that way. When the reality is these companies are making billions in dollars in profit, and that these raises, you know, are a small percentage of that profit. We should be, as a country, talking about a reasonable, equitable distribution of the wealth in this country and the profits that our labor creates. And I think this is a good place to start.
Yeah, they're talking about having 5 or 10% of the profit go into increased wages. That does not seem unreasonable to me. That does not seem like it's going to kill the people that own the car companies. They should be happy that they're going to have happier workers, who may be better at making cars than grumpy workers. That seems to make sense to me. That's part of the advantage of getting rid of the stupid two-tier system. Like, how stupid is it that two guys, one who started in 2006 and one who started, you know, in 2021, are making completely different wages for doing the same work? That makes the guy who's making less money, who started sooner, resent the fact the guy who's standing next to him is getting paid twice as much, and the guy who's getting paid more is kind of worried because he sees a guy doing the same work he's doing for half the pay, and he's wondering, how long are they going to be paying me twice as much doing the same work that guy's doing just as well?
I think you hit the reason. I think you've identified the reason why the company wanted it. that division, divide and conquer kind of thing. You keep that older worker a little worried because, hey, they may try and fire him because he makes too much. And you make that younger worker angry so he doesn't talk to the old timer about what it took to get the union and fight for the union. So you got a chance to divide, conquer, and more profit for them. I think you've identified it.
And that's why I think Sean Fain and his team have the right idea of getting them back together and getting rid of this stupid two-tier thing.
Yeah. So what do you think of him? I mean, I got to tell you, I love the fact that he talks about things like I do, not in terms of red hat, blue hat, but in terms of hard hat, in terms of working class militancy, working class identity. I love the guy.
Yes, I do too. I mean, I remember I was in the Amalgamated headquarters, an Amalgamated Bank, which is started by the Amalgamated Workers Union, and they have a Sidney Hillman boardroom, and he reminds me of Sidney Hillman. Sidney was working in a suit factory. Maybe I told you this months ago, but Sidney was working in a suit factory. He got to be the union leader. He wanted to go on strike. His upper management of his union settled. But he insisted, and thousands of people went on strike anyway. Other union workers kept working, but eventually he became the head of the whole thing. His guys won. No one remembers the union that's no longer exists. And Amalgamated really raised the wages of thousands of garment workers here in the United States, and New York in particular. And I think Sean Fain, he had to beat the management of his own union. He won a fairly close election, when he beat to become the head of the UAW.
Yeah.
He had to beat the entrenched management just like Sidney Hillman did. And I think that's what we need, is union leaders who are willing to say, no, we're not part of the management. We are representing the workers who sometimes at least are opposed to the management, and we're going to do what it takes.
I mean, this is one of those things where, I don't, I'm not, into the whole adversarial thing until you have to be, because I think both management and labor can coexist, because you have similar wants and needs, but they're not all the same. And sometimes you gotta roll up your sleeves and ball up your fists and get in there and duke it out. And in this moment, Sean Fain is at least looking at Ford. Looks like he's won this round. We'll see what happens at Stellantis and GM. But the talk is, it's kind of the agreement that they're going to have is kind of going to mirror the Ford agreement, which would be an enormous victory for those workers.
I think he's doing well.
Final thought?
Yeah, I'm for it. I mean, union and management are working together, but it's kind of like what Ronald Reagan says, trust but verify. You cut the cake, the other guy gets to choose the pieces. You don't just kind of do it arbitrarily.
You sound like my wife.
You can be best buddies, but you still, that doesn't mean you agree on everything.
Yeah, there you go.
So work together, but verify everything too.
PatrioticMillionaires.org is the website. Morris Pearl, the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. Morris, great talking with you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be in your show.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. That's all.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I hear the cry all the time, gas prices are too high. And I agree, gas prices are high. And it's not Joe Biden who did it. I know. You've got an entire right-wing media structure going, oh, it's all Joe Biden did this. It's all Joe Biden's fault. It's all his fault. I look at this story by Reuters. U.S. refinery Marathon Petroleum. They announced on Wednesday that they were going to do a fresh $5 billion stock buyback plan, or a repurchasing plan. Still has about $4.3 billion remaining as of September 30th from its previous buyback. So we're talking a lot of money. They had about $7.3 billion cash on hand and going to raise the stock dividend by 10%. So what does all that mean? Well, that means by buying back all the shares, they're going to raise the share price and they're going to pay more dividends to the people holding the shares, which means more profit for the people at the top and for people like Morris, more people who own shares. They're going to profit from this. And who pays for that? Yeah, you do. Oh, no, that's just gambling on Wall Street. No, the stock buybacks, those are profits. The idea was is you make all these profits and, you know, we give massive tax breaks and all this stuff so that they would reinvest and do all kinds of stuff. They're not. Now, here's the thing. If they really, really, you know, if they really wanted to be a patriotic American company and help out in this moment of need of high gas prices, you know, they may take some of that $5 billion that they're buying stock back with, and they may invest it in more refining capacity. The oil companies who are making record bank, they might do more drilling. And I know, but Rick, Joe Biden's against all that. No, they've given out more leases than I think have been out in history. I mean, these oil companies are hoarding these oil leases, these drilling leases, and doing nothing with it. Why? Pretty simple. They're happy with where the price is because they're not having to do a whole bunch of work and they're making record profits. They're doing well. They've actually gotten us accustomed to paying the higher prices. Now, we'll complain about it. We're going to pay it anyway. And they know that. And for me, moving to the electric vehicle, moving to public transit, giving commuters and people other options is incredibly important to me. Because then, you know, maybe you start seeing the prices go down. And what I get from people, and I love this argument, you know, when Donald Trump was president in 2020, you know, gas prices were like $2, $2.50 a gallon. And you go, yeah, if you remember, we were all locked up. We were all home. People weren't going to work every day. There weren't, you know, I remember driving on the highway going, wouldn't it be great if it were this wide open all the time? It was difficult coming back to normal, seeing all the traffic that we missed for a brief period of time. And do you know what not having traffic did? It meant we weren't using as much fuel. And here's the thing, the oil companies, they were still pumping it and had nowhere to store it. So what'd they have to do when they had an oversupply of a product? What we learned in Econ 101, you got to lower the price. And they, just to get rid of it. And they did. But once people started going back to their lives, going back to work, going back to traveling, going back to, you know, whatever Americans do on the road during the day, where I have no idea why you're just wandering around aimlessly, the prices went up. And here we are. They're not drilling more to meet the demand. they're happy where the price is. And I just find it amazing that, you know, we still have people going, it's all Joe Biden's fault. When you look at these corporations who are gouging our eyes out on every front. Why? Because they can. Because they can. And this is where I keep going back to. I would love to go back to the Eisenhower tax code. A 56% corporate tax rate. Look, if you don't want to pay the 56% corporate tax rate, you don't have to. You could invest in better equipment and plants and in your workers. You could give better wages and benefits. You could do a whole bunch of stuff with that wealth, with those profits. You just can't hoard it.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. A search of a house in Bowdoin, Maine has ended, but the search for the suspect in last night's deadly mass shootings in nearby Lewiston continues. CBS's Elaine Cajano reports.
Residents here in Lewiston and the entire county have been ordered to shelter in place, and as a precaution, multiple schools and businesses are also closed today.
Israeli troops briefly raid northern Gaza to prepare for an expected full-scale incursion. Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson Jonathan Conricus.
Our forces are now back in Israel. The activity occurred during the night and was concluded successfully without any significant events.
New U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson has met with President Biden at the White House. CBS's Nicole Killian says of the Louisiana Republican.
Several Republican lawmakers told us they don't think Speaker Johnson will inject his personal views into his new role. For his part, Johnson also expressed a willingness to work across the aisle, calling his meeting today with President Biden productive.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Weather experts say climate change is making October nights in the Midwest feel warmer more often than not. A new analysis from the nonprofit Climate Central says fall evening temperatures in the U.S. have warmed by nearly 2 degrees on average since 1970. In Madison and Milwaukee, it's closer to 4 degrees. Scientists say mosquitoes are thriving and people with respiratory issues like asthma are suffering. A committee in the state assembly held a public hearing Thursday on a bill that would fine public universities for violating someone's free speech. Under the bill, any Universities of Wisconsin school that is found by a court of violating someone's free speech will get a $500 fine. The school would also be charged $50 a day if the violation continues. If passed by the legislature, the bill would almost certainly be vetoed by Governor Evers. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Scattered thunderstorms likely tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows around 61. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered storms tomorrow, 65. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Ambrose, a boring neighbor and former Musk admirer. Chap began asking questions and getting nothing but evasions, lies, and disrespect. Musk was messing with Texas, so Ambrose rallied local opposition through a website he named Keep Bastrop Boring. With a drone, he videoed Musk's expanding industrial mess, broadcasting the videos throughout the area. He filed actions with county, state, and national regulatory authorities and got his state senator to hold a hearing attended by hundreds of residents in this rural county. Musk can bamboozle powerful officials, but not feisty people like Chap, who recently ridiculed the pouty billionaire. Development remains legal in Bastrop, Ambrose told him, but what is illegal is polluting Texas water. You're making this way harder than it has to be. This is Jim Hightower saying the fight goes on, and I'm betting on Chap.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, the good news, the UAW members, 57,000 Ford workers, UAW members, tentative agreement, going back to work. That is a good thing. But I saw this thing from GM. Now, there's talk that GM and Stellantis, they're in talks right now. And the hope is that they're going to follow in suit, which would be a fabulous thing. But I saw this line in a story that GM said that they are losing about $200 million a week because of the strike. And that evidently was before they struck the Arlington, Texas plant, which is extraordinarily profitable. It's where they make the big SUVs and the big trucks and that stuff. If you're losing $200 million a week, isn't it in your interest to, I don't know, come to some kind of an agreement? And this is the thing that I talk about all the time. You see these strikes where it's not about the money. It's about the power and the control. It's about you'll get what I give you and you'll like it. Well, these people are saying, nope, we're not going to like it. We're going to the street as long as it's going to take. And one of those people who is out in the street still is Tiffany Simmons. She is a UAW Local 900 member. And one of those workers who was in the first wave of going out on strike. Tiffany, thanks for taking time for us.
Not a problem at all. How are you?
I am good. So this is good news. The workers at Ford, tentative agreement, going back to work. This is real progress.
Yes, it is. We have seen the light at the end of the tunnel. I actually am a production team leader, so I report first thing 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
That is, so let me ask you this, because, you know, you guys have been off, what, since September 15th?
Yes.
This, you know, the strikes are difficult on everyone. This had to be hard, difficult on your family. I mean, because you've missed a couple of paychecks that, you know, things are getting a little squeezed. How has this been for you?
It was definitely an adjustment because this is not my first contract. We kind of were prepared. I tried to prep myself as much as possible for a strike, but of course life happens. Yep. And it got uncomfortable. I'm not going to say we struggled, but it definitely was not our comfort level. Of course, when you're used to spending money a certain way, when you're used to having a certain amount of money, when you're used to being able to have a bit of a certain amount of financial freedom, anything that hinders that is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I think everyone was a little discomfort. It did get a little rough for some of our newer hires or some of our younger people because everybody's situation was different, but it's tough as in any job to go without a paycheck for a while. And it kind of speaks to what we're fighting for. $500 was not enough to live on comfortably.
Yeah. No,
for 42 days.
I'm with you. But, you know, I go back to, and this is where, you know, when I was just a young kid, you know, starting my first Teamster job, an old timer took me aside and said, "Hey, kid, before you get used to spending this money,
Put 6 months of bills in a can, in a sock, in a bank account somewhere, and forget you have it, because someday you may have to go on strike and you're going to want that. You're going to want your bills paid. You're going to want to have something to fall back on so that, you're planning on it. And I got to tell you, with these huge raises that, they're getting, you guys are getting now, that's some good advice, because the next contract in 28 could be just as contentious.
Yes. So that was a lesson that I think, because my mom and my dad, they used to say the same thing. You always want to put money up for a rainy day or for just for any type of emergency, any type of financial emergency. You want to put money away. Like my mom would teach me, put money away all year round for Christmas. Now this is kind of like that, although it's not as pleasant, but I know that I need to put a little money away every paycheck so that if anything like this happens to where we're out of work, I can sustain.
Yeah. Because this is like Christmas, Tiffany. I got to be honest with you. I'm looking at the at what you guys got in this contract. This is good stuff. And this is worth fighting over. And, you know, as the old timer told me, you know, sometimes you've got to go to the picket line to defend what you've fought for so that you can hold on to it. And looking at this, this is worth defending.
Yes. So we are getting everything within the past 24 hours has been like real time. We are getting updates as they are coming out. So there's already been discussion. Of course, you can't please everyone. There is some discussions that about things that they we still need fixed, we still need done. But my personal opinion, this was a victory. We've seen a lot of things that we have not seen in a very long time. We got a lot of things that we did not think that we could get. And while it's a good thing to, or it's a natural thing to say, oh, we could have got more. Oh, we should have got more. For some of us, like for me personally, this, I know I have quite a few contracts before I'm ready to retire. So I'm not necessarily focused on the benefits of, or I'm not necessarily focused on why I didn't get this for my retirement, because my retirement isn't here yet. I think this contract speaks a little bit to everyone's individual household. It's kind of, there's something for everyone. Everyone, and I can see where they tried to be fair all around the table. Going into a contract and having as rough as a fight as we've had, I didn't go into it thinking that we would come out with this perfect contract and everything would be okay and we would get every single thing down to the details that we asked for. But I'm astounded at the progress that we made. It's worth me being impressed by. Like, I'm honestly, I mean,
the message out of this, Tiffany,
it was a victory for us.
The message out of this is strikes work. I mean, because I was reading something that said you guys ended up getting 50% more than what was offered before you went on strike. That is enormous.
That is the biggest, that's the biggest victory of all of this, is because now we see when we stand up, when we fight, when we make our voices heard, people listen. They have to listen. When we make demands, they have to be heard and met to a certain extent. And it gives us motivation for the next fight. The next contract, we'll be ready to fight. And now that we know how, and now that we've gone through the motions of a strike, we know how a strike is done, guess what? We'll be more prepared to buckle down and fight even harder.
You got a little practice in there. And look, you know, I knew some old timers when I was younger, and they would tell me about the battles of the 50s and 60s. And I mean, we're talking real battles. I mean, you know, clubs and beatings and, you know, all blood and guts kind of stuff. And they said, look, you know, sometimes you go on strike just to bring people together, to create that solidarity that you need, that militancy that you need. And look, as I was walking the picket line in Toledo and Centerline, Michigan, and in Wayne, you know, talking to people, you could feel that energy of people who they may not have liked each other the day before the strike, but on that picket line, they were brothers and sisters.
And you know what? We had a lot of people. It was so, being one of the people that was there every single day or every single night of this experience, it was so like great to see how many people got to meet one another. People made new friends, new family. Well, I call them new family members. Everybody made new family members. Everybody spoke to people that they wouldn't necessarily get to see or speak to. You had people that have 20, 30 years of seniority that it was like a reunion for them because they've all been moved around to different buildings, different shifts, different jobs. And we would have people come into the hall and visit and say, like, I haven't seen this person in this amount of years. And I just ran into them on the picket line. It was a beautiful thing to see how many people wandered in from off of, from our other, from our sister locals, from our, from, and we had the pilots from Delta, and I believe Delta and Spirit came to see us. We had people, we had the nurses, they came to see us, and they're fighting, everybody's fighting. There are so many people fighting the good fight right now for different causes, but it's all for the same goal, to be treated fairly, to be paid fairly, to be appreciated for these jobs that we get up, we suit up, and we go out and make the world go.
No, and you should be at the front lines of the messaging on the next battle. I mean, you know, obviously Stellantis and GM, hopefully they come along, and hopefully that's happening as we speak. But the next real battle, and I'm hoping that the kind of community that you're talking about having been built, the kind of unity and solidarity that's going on, then is the next fight, which is organizing the unorganized auto workers so that across the board you can raise wages, hours, and conditions for workers across the industry.
I pray that my brothers and sisters that are not my brothers and sisters yet, I pray that they watch this battle and they understand that they can have the same thing, that they can have, they can make their demands heard, that their voices can be heard within a union. I hope that everyone that is not unionized takes a look at this monumental moment and they see, hey, this is something worth fighting for. And it's a beautiful thing when we get to fight together, and not only fight together, but you've got a whole, there's a whole network, a whole family out here that's willing to fight for and with them. Anybody can have it. You just got to stand up and choose to.
Yeah. But here's the thing. And this is where I come back to. I think this agreement was possible from the beginning. Again, these companies, they have the money, they have the ability to do these things. And I would argue more, they just don't want to. They don't want to share. But the sad thing is, and I saw this this report that said, you know, over the 6 weeks of the strike, you know, Ford is going to lose about $1.3 billion this year in pre-tax earnings. And you go, did you have to learn that lesson that way? Couldn't you have just come to the table and said, hey, nobody wins in these situations. Let's move.
Exactly. We could have come to common ground without any of this even having to take place. Imagine how much money you could have saved by us coming to this conclusion earlier on.
Yeah. But again, for me, maybe you'll agree with this, but for me, it's never about the money. It's about the power, the control. It's about you'll get what you'll get and you won't throw a fit. You'll be grateful for it, Tiffany.
Exactly. It's not about the money. It's about the quality of life. It's about being respected. It's about being appreciated. It's about feeling like a human and not a robot or some expendable piece of machinery. Like, it's about us feeling like we're worth what the work that we do. Yeah, it's about having a job that you're, it's about having a job that you are proud of. It is about having benefits that you are proud of.
No, part of that pride is the fact that you're able to support yourself and your family and do it in a way that makes lives better. Look, you know, I've talked about this 100 times on the show here recently. You know, when I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, when the family next to us, when the husband got a job at Ford, Their lives got immeasurably better. They had food at the end of the month. They got bought a secondhand car. Within a couple of months, they moved out. Their lives got better right in front of us. So for me, that message of union job, better life was front and center. And this is going to help. Going to help move that forward. Yeah. And I give you guys credit for being out there. Last question I've got for you. What are we hearing on the other side, the GM, the Stellantis side? Are we hearing that they're close to an agreement, that because they talk about pattern bargaining, they're not going to accept anything less than Ford got? What are we expecting?
I can hope that because we kicked it off, I would hope that our brothers and sisters that are still out there on the front line, that they get, I hope everybody gets everything they ask for. I know that that's a very steep hope, but I feel like it's hard to put into words because this is, I'm still reeling. Like, it's just so unreal that we just went through the 42 days that we just went through. I hope that they know that we still have work to do once this comes out, because it's not up to just one person. Now we have to sit down. We have to go through what we were offered. We've got to ultimately vote on it. And majority rules. If my brothers and sisters don't think that this was a fair fight and it gets turned down, guess what? I'm back on the picket line supporting whatever decision is made.
I know I said last question, but you just brought up an interesting thing, because my friends at Mack Truck, they had a tentative agreement that they voted down, and they're on the picket line right now. Your union brothers and sisters in Allentown and in other places. What are the chances you think that your brothers and sisters who work at Ford vote this down? What are the chances of that?
It's never easy to say. Like,
no, what are you hearing from the people around you? Are you hearing people who are happy and go, hey, this is great? Or are they going, no, we want more?
So honestly, it's split right now.
Okay.
It's a split decision. Everybody is disappointed about, not even at the contract as a whole, but you have a lot of people that are disappointed about certain parts. Like, I may be disappointed about pensions, whereas somebody else may be disappointed about the percentage of the pay raise. Everybody with a contract, every individual will find something that they feel could have been done better.
Right. That's just people in general.
It's just people in general, but it also raises awareness that, hey, if you think that this didn't go right and you feel that we should have fought for this, or you feel like that this should have been tweaked, why not be the person next time sitting at that table doing it? It makes you want to get involved, get active. You cannot fight if you are not in the fight.
There you go. If you don't have your digits balled up, you can't throw a punch. Tiffany,
you can't stand on the sideline and not fight.
There you go. Tiffany Simmons, I appreciate the time. Congratulations. To me, this looks like a victory. But as you've pointed out, we'll see what happens with the vote. But I appreciate you taking some time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on the other side.
Good stuff. Appreciate it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1825. That was the day the construction of the Erie Canal was completed. The 363-mile canal connected the Atlantic Ocean to the Great Lakes by way of the Hudson River. The project was started in 1817. Thousands of workers toiled on the project. Many German immigrants worked as stonemasons on the project, while immigrants from Northern Ireland worked as general laborers. First, they had to clear the thick growth of forest that covered much of the planned canal path. And then they had to dig the canal by hand with picks and shovels. Once dug, they had to line the canal with stones and clay and construct the locks. For this backbreaking work, they received between 30 and 50 cents per day. There were many dangers working on the canal. Laborers had to struggle through knee-deep mud as the canal crossed the boggy ground of the Montezuma Swamp west of Syracuse, New York. Hundreds of workers contracted malaria. They called the illness swamp fever. It is uncertain, however, how many workers died building the canal. Some estimates are as high as 1,000 workers. Many who died were buried in unmarked graves along the waterway. Like the stories of many working people, their names are lost to history.
I got a mule and her name is Sal. 15 miles on the Erie Canal. She's a good old worker and a good old pal. 15 miles on the Erie Canal.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
We know every inch of the way. From Alden to Buffalo, Love Bridge, everybody.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Angry emails to the top, and a couple of them. Couple of angry emails over my comments on the shooting in Maine, and look, I'm not going to walk back from them. I had a couple of people, you know, complaining that I was talking bad about religion and people who pray, and that was not the point at all. If you took me degrading people who pray, if that's what you took from my statement, that's on you. Because that's not what I said. I said, look, you got all these people who, when tragedy strikes, they're out there saying thoughts and prayers. Well, if the prayers were actually working, these things would stop. This is the 36th one of them this year alone. And every time it's thoughts and prayers. At some point, don't the prayers work? And if they're not working, maybe stop. Because if the person that you're praying to, whoever your supreme being is, you know, whatever it is you worship, they're clearly not listening and or not interested in them doing it. Maybe. And this goes back to my snake venom church buddy who reaches into boxes with poisonous snakes because, you know, if it's God's will that you get bitten, you die, only to find out they had the anti-venom in back. And his rationale is, well, yeah, God, you know, wanted you to get bitten by the serpent and die. But if you know, he didn't want us to have the anti-venom, he wouldn't have let us create it. And this is a perfect position for this. Because if you think about it, you're usurping God's will. You're usurping God's will by not dying. If to use his logic that, you know, yeah, you know, I was supposed to die from the snake venom bite, but we have this thing that we created, and God gave us the ability. You know, God gives us the ability to pass laws to ensure people don't die in mass shootings. How about we do this? So for the people who are very angry at me, because they believe prayer works, how about, here's an idea, and I know, why don't we pray that the people who are praying in these moments of tragedy, why don't we pray that they do something about it? Now, this is the important part here. How about we use our prayers in a way that might actually, you know, make lives better? Maybe gun fetish Barbie, maybe we pray for her to go, oh, epiphany. These guns that I have such an affinity for, they're taking lives. Maybe we should have some parameters. Maybe when a family calls and says, hey, we have a loved one who's hearing voices and is distraught and has an arsenal. Maybe we have a policy in place where we go, you know, probably not the person who should have an arsenal. Maybe we look into this. And I know, shall not be infringed, Rick. Yeah, tell that to the 18 people who were murdered.
Where's there shall not be infringed. Tell that to the 13 people who were injured. Where's there shall not be infringed. Yeah, because life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, you know, life. And as I said, you know, a moment at the beginning, look, I'm not a gun grabber. I've actually enjoyed shooting guns over the years. I can hit plates. But there's a moment where you go, your right to have these things should not supersede my right to live. Sorry. And I know, shall not be infringed. Don't you read? Yes, I do read. I read the entire amendment. So there's a place for you if you're a gun fetishist. In fact, you know, they'll march you around and let you shoot all the time. But oddly enough, they control the guns even there. But I want to hear your thoughts on this. If this works, I mean, if the prayer thing works, why was this number 36 of this year? I'm just curious. And again, I go back to, as I said, you know, you watch a football game, everyone's praying, you know, thanking God for, I scored a touchdown. You never hear someone blame God for fumbling on the 1 yard line. So there is that. Also, I'm excited to see what happens.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.